30 years ago this week, the Chinese government sent forces into Tiananmen Square in Beijing to enforce martial law that had been imposed after thousands of mostly young protesters and workers assembled in the square to demand greater freedoms. Hundreds, perhaps thousands, were killed. Thousands others were injured. A young man named Shen Tong was one of the student leaders in the Tiananmen Square protests of 1989. He was just 20 years old at the time, but he had also grown up not far from Tiananmen Square. And in 1990, he published a memoir of his childhood and the violence that ended it. I met Shen Tong just a little over a year after the massacre at Tiananmen Square.
Our movement is not a single event. The Last Spring Movement is really an explosion of the 10 years in the contemporary Chinese people's struggle for greater freedom and democracy for China. And it's associated with open-door policy, economical, political reform, as well as some fundamental cultural and psychological change in China for the last now 12 years. And also, simply, it's not over. A lot of people thought the massacre in Tiananmen Square shut down everything. Unfortunately, Chinese people didn't make it. Meanwhile, Eastern Europeans, they made it. But for me, the movement, the potential, the foundation for the Last Spring Movement, the people's dissatisfaction, the decentralizing trained by the local government, politically and economically, and the factionism on the army, young intellectuals and young generation searching for the new possibilities for China, all those things were the factors and foundation for the Last Spring Movement. There seems there are two Tiananmen Square. The square which Westerners witnessed through the Western media is quite different from the one I really experienced from my childhood till the 1989 movement. So, because it's so dramatic, the second Tiananmen Square is so dramatic, it's catch up people's imagination, but meanwhile it's kind of stick out of China. It's kind of just a drama. So people don't really understand where the movement came from, so they don't really understand where it goes. So that's why I feel that's the time I feel the urgency to write the book, because I think by telling my personal story, I can hopefully show how my generation, the young generation, which is very distinguished from other generations in China previously, especially in terms of the ideology and the sense of social involvement, and how this generation grew up and finally shaped the 1989 movement. And so hopefully people will understand why I think the movement didn't stop at all, and I feel strong hope and very optimistic for the future.
Why is your generation different?
Well, it's generally due to the so-called 10 years open door policy period before 1989 movement, ever since the end of the 1970s, the fall of Mao Zedong's time, you know. Well, at that time, the Cultural Revolution finished. Cultural Revolution was over after 10 years, from 1966 to 1976, and people started to vent their anger. Meanwhile, economically, it's more free economy, and China opened door to the Western world. It's amazing for the whole world. Deng Xiaoping was featured twice by Time magazine as Man of the Year. And so Western ideas, Western materialism, Western pop music, along with China's own, you know, new type, new literature, new poetry, new pop music, really started the whole new cultural background. And start from that time, my generation grew up. So we saw a lot of problems in the society, but different from other generation, we didn't suffer anything. You know, from all the disasters in this 40 years Communist Party's control. And we have Western ideas to come. It's kind of alternatives. So all this opportunity provides one big, chance for my generation and intellectuals in China, which is we started to question if so-called universal truth, communism, is only a way for China or not. And our answer is quite clear. Now, it's not.
How far back can you remember thinking that you and other people of your generation really could make a change?
Well, the movement since the open door policy started, the pro-democracy movement started as well. And from 1978, Democracy War Movement in Beijing.
But you were only 10 years old then.
Yeah, yeah. But very interesting, my house was on Chang'an Avenue, which is a main street in Beijing downtown, and it's like a mile west from Tiananmen Square. So far back to like 72 or 74, when Nixon and the Japan Prime Minister visit China, Mao Zedong's death, Zhou Enlai's death, and all the other events, major events, so happened in Tiananmen Square or Chang'an Avenue. So it's like history walked by my window. You know, so although from my childhood, I didn't really understand what really happening. But my father was take me to all the events, like 1976 Tiananmen Massacre, not well known in the world. But I was there in Tiananmen Square. I was 8 years old. You know, the people got beaten up, blood all over the places. Till 1989. But my generation, start from 1978, is more or less like non-violent and more progressive than reaction movement like 1976. So from there, we started to have this, build up this new ideology, which I think is individualism. And I think in the long run, it's a psychological basis for a pluralist society in the future. So almost every year, we have elite or urban area people or student movement gradually build up the whole new atmosphere in the society. We finally shaped 1989, this huge real nationwide movement.
What is your relationship now with China? Will you be going back?
No, I can't now because...
Not now, but I mean, someday you will, right?
Oh, yeah. I will go back as soon as possible. I mean, the relationship... A lot of people think the exile movement is always a sad story, but actually for China's situation, it's not. We really functioned as a brain of the opposition political movement right now. Like what I said, the second of the three approaches, the second approach. Yeah, we cooperate with the underground movement closely by providing them information, equipment, and money. And also we have our broadcasting station, you know, covered 60% of land, reach 80% of population in China. Chinese language newspapers and magazines we smuggle in China every day from South China. So we really bring China help and meanwhile put a lot of pressure on the Chinese government, not only by doing all this the uncensored news, but also by lobbying to various countries, indirectly put pressure to them. And more importantly, learn and practice democracy among the exile community to be ready for the future struggle inside China.
Is it impossible today to repress a country when you have fax machines and video cassette recorders and satellites and cellular...
And computer modem.
Uh-huh. I mean, when I've heard many people say that it will no longer be possible to keep a country behind, if you will, an iron curtain, because there's no such thing anymore. Uh-huh. The communication makes it impossible.
You're correct. It's impossible. Although after the June 4th massacre, the central government gets the power again to control all the China press. The press in China also reformed for 10 years. It was semi-free press, kind of, before the movement and during. But that doesn't work because you still have Voice of America, you have BBC, you have Hong Kong and Taiwan magazine, newspaper, and our exile, the most powerful exile broadcasting station, and papers and magazines. So the difference is people don't have enough political awareness, they don't care. But all the urban area people, which is more than 20% of the population, if they want to know what really happened on some matter, what's really going on in the world, they can easily find out.
But the epilogue to the story is that the Chinese government has now all but completely obliterated the Tiananmen Square story from all public records. So much so that NBC News reported this week that many young Chinese today aren't even aware that the protests ever took place. I'm Bill Thompson, and now I've heard everything.